Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
Some hauntings begin with houses that remember too much. This one began with a voice that remembered her name. It was the kind of sound that doesn't echo because it never leaves the air. Low, certain, male. The first time she heard it, she was alone folding laundry, sunlight thin on the floorboards. The syllables came from just behind her shoulder, close enough that she could feel the shape of them against her ear. She turned, expecting to see someone in the doorway. There was no one. The house was still, the air ordinary, but something inside that stillness shifted, as if the room itself had inhaled. She was not a person who frightened easily. Calm came naturally to her, slow heart, even tone, the quiet strength of someone who believes the world holds order, even when it doesn't show its work. So she whispered into the space what polite people say to strangers. Hello. The silence that followed felt like an answer. After that, it came often. Sometimes the same voice, sometimes only the change in temperature that announced it. She learned its signature, the way air thickened a second before it touched her. Fingers through her hair that felt like static turning to weight, a brush across her cheek that wasn't warmth or cold, but something denser than both. The first time it happened, she stepped back, startled. The second time, she stayed still and let it happen. Seemed to like that. Over weeks, the touches grew familiar, like a ritual between them. It would come at the same hour each night, a cool pressure at her shoulder, a presence just inside the edge of seeing. She would speak softly, as if talking to herself. "You again?" The air would thrum in response. Sometimes she thought she could almost hear breath moving where no lungs should be. She pitied it before she feared it. That was her first mistake. When you meet the unknown with pity, it learns your softness and keeps it as permission. She thought kindness might calm it, that gentleness could civilize whatever restless energy lingered there. She talked as though it could hear, told it about the small details of her days, about songs that stuck in her head, about the weather, and in return, it touched her carefully as though listening. But every relationship has limits, even with the unseen. She discovered that the night she told it no, she'd been trying to sleep, mind full of noise from the week. The touch came again, a cold drag across her face, and she snapped the way tired people do. "Leave me alone," she muttered into the dark. The silence that followed was heavy, waiting. Then the air collapsed onto her chest. She couldn't breathe. The pressure was exact, deliberate, like the weight of two hands pressing straight down on her lungs. Panic flared bright behind her eyes. She clawed at nothing. Just when the world narrowed to a point of light, the weight lifted. She sat up, gasping. The room was ordinary again. Her throat ached as though fingers had been there. In the morning, she found faint red marks under her collarbone. She told herself they were scratches from sleep. She always told herself something like that. She had begun to think of it as he was quiet for a while. After that, as if ashamed. Then came back gentle, the way someone returns after an argument with a bouquet they can't quite afford. Soft touches, no pressure, just presence. She forgave him because that's what she does, because it was easier to believe in remorse than in malice. For months, their uneasy peace held. Then one afternoon, she was halfway up the school stairs when she heard the steps behind her. Slow, steady, measured. She turned and saw him for the first time, a figure taller than anyone she knew, wrapped in black that seemed to absorb the light rather than reflect it. A hood obscured where his face should have been. The edges of him weren't solid, they shimmered, blurred like smoke caught in glass. For two heartbeats, she saw him clearly. Then she blinked, and he was gone. Her friend was beside her, halfway through a sentence. "What's wrong?" She stared down the empty stairs. "Did you see him?" "See who?" "The tall guy. All in black right behind us." Her friend frowned. "There's nobody there." The moment passed, but it didn't leave. It never did. She tried to laugh it off, but later that day, she caught herself glancing over her shoulder every time the hallway went quiet. That night, he returned closer than before. The cold brushed her cheek like an apology. She whispered, "I saw you." The air shifted, pleased, almost proud. And deep inside that shifting, she thought she heard a sound that might have been a sigh. Jealousy doesn't need a mouth to speak. It can talk in temperature alone. She started to notice the timing. If she lingered on the phone, the room cooled. If laughter carried too long, the air would thicken at her shoulder, a quiet claim that did not have to be said out loud. If she texted a friend late and the glow of her screen held her eyes, her hair would lift as if a hand had passed over it. He had a way of standing precisely where attention was aimed, just behind it, just beneath it, as if he were learning to live on the leftovers of her focus. She tried to be kind to the need without surrendering to the claim. "Not now," she'd say softly, as though she were calming a startled animal. Most nights, the temperature would slowly rise again, the air loosening to its normal weight. Other nights, the pressure returned, the now familiar pinning that wasn't bruising but wasn't harmless either. It had a measured quality that unsettled her more than any sudden grab. He knew the line. He chose to balance on it. When she finally told her closest friend, she expected skepticism. Instead, the friend listened all the way through, voice, touches, the weight on her chest, and then spoke as if placing stones evenly to cross a river. "Whatever it is," the friend said, "it wants to be first." "I can't give it that," she answered. "Then it'll keep asking." They tried to laugh, but the sound of it wobbled. He began to play with the edges of her sleep. She would drift toward it, that narrow doorway where the mind turns the lights down, and feel a cool palm set gently over her mouth. Not to suffocate, not even to silence, but to remind. She'd wake with the taste of winter in the back of her throat. On the worst nights, the pressure slid to her sternum, precise and heavy. And the room would narrow until thinking felt like pushing through a crowded hallway. He never held long enough to make the world go dark, but he held long enough to leave her shaking after, the bones of her chest aware of themselves in a way they shouldn't have to be. She tried the simple experiment she'd seen on the show she used to watch with the sound turned low for courage. 2 knocks for yes, 1 for no. It felt childish to ask the dark for answers, but childishness sometimes feels like control. "Are you here?" she asked. Sitting up with the covers gathered at her waist, 2 soft knocks, not in the wall, in the room. "Do you mean me harm?" A long stretch of silence, then a single tap, as if the space itself had shrugged. "Are you angry with me?" 2 hesitant knocks, spaced wide like second thoughts. "Are you angry because you frightened me?" The answer cracked the air beside her ear, 2 sharp knocks so close she flinched and put a hand there, as if she could catch the sound before it fell. It felt absurd to scold something she could not see, but she did anyway, gently. "Don't do that again." The room relaxed by degrees, a muscle unclenching. No apology, not really. But the air lost its edge. Her friend hated the knocking story. "You don't negotiate with something that chokes you," she said. The steadiness in her voice cut from fatigue. "You set a boundary and you hold it until it learns your shape." "It isn't a person," she said quietly. "Boundaries don't mean the same thing to it." "Then make yourself a boundary," the friend replied. "Don't bend." She wanted to. She tried to. But boundaries are most difficult with the familiar, and he had become that. A familiar strangeness, a routine. He followed her everywhere. To her grandparents' house, where the clocks had learned the soft patience of old wood. To a friend's spare room where laundry detergent scented the air like a memory. To a campground by a river where the night's usual orchestra hushed all at once the moment he arrived, as if the frogs and insects had been told to hold their breath. She lay awake in her sleeping bag, listening to a silence that wasn't silence, a listening of its own, until the faintest cool touched her brow like a kiss she refused to name. 2 times she saw him full height. 1 on the school stairs, the tall column of black with edges like smoke. 2 on the landing where the hallway bent toward her room, standing perfectly still, as if staircases meant more to him than level floors did. She watched him through that slant of vision where the world seems to turn a little syrupy, and when she blinked, he was gone. The space he had occupied, now just air that remembered. Prom came in a whirl of borrowed fabrics and lights that made everyone look gold. Her friend had done the convincing, the hair, the shoes, made a promise with all of it, that tonight would belong to ordinary joys. They were two songs in when the friend went still, not frozen so much as paused in a way that made the body look like it had been set down too fast. Her eyes tracked toward the far wall where a group of students had left a gap big enough to be a doorway. He stood in that gap without standing. The space took his shape the way a sheet remembers the body that slept in it. Not everyone could see, but everyone felt something. They shifted around him, the way water splits for a piling without noticing they'd done it. The friend's breath shortened to small, sharp sips. "He's empty," she whispered, her voice thinner than the music. "He makes me feel hollow." She cried then, not loudly, but in that helpless way that emptiness sometimes demands. People looked and then looked away because looking at grief has a gravity to it, and the night was designed for lighter things. She wrapped her friend in both arms and rocked her slightly to the rhythm of a song neither of them heard. Anger, clean and cold, rose in her like a tide. She could absorb what he did to her, forgive it, manage it, make room for it. Like a bad tenant, you can't evict, but not this. Not someone she loved. When the house was quiet again and the dress hung from a chair like a memory, she stood in the doorway and let the dark listen. "Do not touch what is not yours," she said, softly but without tremor. The air pressed in a little, then eased back like a step taken to acknowledge the line. For the first time, she did not thank the quiet for returning. She took it as the minimum. He stayed careful for a while after that. Cool touches that stopped when she tensed, the pressure absent, the voice holding itself back to the edges of hearing. She slept. She ate. She returned calls. She let the days look like days again. But possessiveness is patient when it must be. And he learned patience. He began to appear in the places people look without thinking, dark windows at night that turn into mirrors, the blank screens of turned-off televisions, the sudden dark of a phone gone to sleep mid-text. She'd catch a suggestion of him behind her in the glass and refuse the impulse to look back. Attention was the prize. She would ration it like medicine. He learned her cycles. The nights when exhaustion softened her resolve, the mornings when quiet made room for listening. He pressed then, just enough to be known. A cool palm at the base of her throat. A single knock on the headboard a moment before sleep, the faintest pressure at her sternum that retreated the moment she sat up to show she'd noticed. Her friend didn't stop urging help that looked like action. Bring others in. Call the pastor who understood things like this without condescension. Fill the house with ordinary sounds. Play music that doesn't apologize for taking up space. She did some of it. Not all at once. She didn't want to declare war, only to reclaim her days. She let a playlist run while she did dishes. She asked her friend to sit on the couch and talk with the television off. She left the bedroom door ajar into the hall lights, not because the light scared him, but because the open space made her feel like the house was on her side. He didn't leave. He adjusted. He stepped back half a pace as if measuring what new lines would hold. She counted a handful of days without an incident, 3, then 4, and then the cycle shortened again. 2 days. 1. The ordinary returned to its thin edge. At her grandparents' during a week of rain that stitched the windows, she woke to the bed dip just beside her hip. Not a cold. Not a pressure. Weight. The mattress accepted it the way bodies accept other bodies, so arms gathered her ribs, gentle, careful, practiced. That tenderness scared her more than the chokes ever had. She didn't shove the presence away. She didn't sink into it. She said at a volume that made the words feel like a single thread, "I'm not yours." The weight lifted. The cold unfurled. The room breathed and took her with it. In the morning, she told her friend all of it without rounding the corners. No jokes to shave down the fear. no euphemisms to make the language sit easier in the mouth. When she finished, her friend said the kind of thing you only say when you're willing to risk being heard wrong. "He isn't weather," she said. "You don't rearrange your plans around a person who sits on your bed while you're sleeping. You change the locks." It sounded simple. It wasn't. Locks in this case meant choices rehearsed daily until they become reflex. Who gets the first glance when the room shifts? Who gets silence and who gets speech? How long you stay still when your name arrives in a voice that makes the dark sound deliberate. She started practicing the simplest of those choices, not turning. The voice came in the kitchen, name soft, familiarity stripped of threat, and she kept her eyes on the glass in her hand. "Not now," she said, and drank. The pressure came later, quick and pointed, a punctuation mark that said, "I can." She nodded into the dark. "I know." Calm as someone setting a cup on a saucer. Not defiance, not surrender. A line. And that is how the nights recalibrated. By inches, not miles. Each step a negotiation between what he demanded and what she would allow. The air forever measuring who would be first.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now, so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.